Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today I will analyze the case of Matthew Neely and Rajon Belt Stubblefield. First, I'll look at the timeline of the alleged crime, then move to my analysis. On Saturday, August 30, 2025, a 53-year-old police officer with the Aurora Police Department named Matthew Neely was conducting speed enforcement at East 6th Avenue and Toledo Street in Aurora, Colorado. He was driving an unmarked black Chevrolet Caprice. At 7:29 p.m., Matthew spotted a white Jeep Compass traveling toward him at 54 miles per hour. The Jeep was being driven by a 37-year-old man named Rajon Belt Stubblefield. Matthew decided to initiate a traffic stop. After waiting for a break in traffic, Matthew started driving east on East 6th Avenue and began to catch up with the Jeep Compass. Rajon refused to stop and accelerated in an apparent effort to escape. At 7:30 p.m., at the intersection of East 6th Avenue and Billings Street, he lost control of the Jeep, struck an eastbound car, went over the median, and struck a second car traveling westbound. His airbag deployed, and his vehicle came to a stop. Matthew approached the Jeep Compass with his 9mm service pistol drawn and ordered Rajon to stay in the vehicle and show his hands. It's worth noting that Matthew was not carrying a taser and was not required to carry one. The only less lethal weapons he had were pepper spray and a collapsible baton. Rajon decided not to comply with Matthew's commands. He exited the Jeep Compass and said, "Don't shoot me." Matthew repeatedly said, "Get your hands up," but Rajon did not comply. Matthew grabbed the back of Rajon's shirt with his empty left hand. At some point, Rajon threw a Ruger pistol into the grass by electrical boxes on the side of the road. The men briefly struggled and Matthew fell to the ground. He quickly stood up and repeatedly ordered Rajon to get on the ground. There were several other people in the area, including Rajon's adult son, Zion Murphy, who had been following him in a separate vehicle. Matthew told one unidentified bystander to get away from that mother-blanking gun. Matthew then struck Rajon twice with his left hand, pushing him back, but Rajon still closed the distance. Rajon gestured over to the area where he had thrown the Ruger pistol and repeatedly said, "Get that blank." The blank rhymes with fit. He said this about 11 times in total. It appeared as though he was directing his son Zion to retrieve his pistol. Zion would later say that he believed Rajon wanted him to remove the gun from the scene. Matthew kept backing away as Rajon walked toward him. He ordered Rajon to get on the ground and said, "I'll shoot you." Matthew struck Rajon with his left hand again. After this, Rajon adopted a boxing stance and walked toward Matthew while repeating the question, "You ready for this?" He said it 6 times. He really wanted to know if Matthew was ready. At 7:32 p.m., Matthew discharged his service weapon 3 times, striking Rajon twice in the chest and then once in the head. Rajon did not survive. Other officers arrived on the scene at 7:33 p.m. Matthew directed the first officer who approached him to retrieve the pistol that Rajon had discarded. An autopsy later determined that Rajon's blood alcohol concentration was 0.274%. This is about 3.4 times the legal limit of 0.08% for driving in Colorado. Matthew explained his decision to use lethal force, saying that he was worried that the confrontation would involve a physical fight, which he would lose. This would have enabled Rajon to take his service weapon and use it against him. The killing of Rajon caused a degree of outrage in the community. About 11 months after the shooting, on July 31, 2026, a warrant was issued for Matthew's arrest. He was charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter. Matthew surrendered and was later released on a $200,000 bond. The Aurora police chief made a statement after the arrest saying, quote, "I will say this. Police officers are routinely called on to address, sometimes in seconds, dangerous and rapidly evolving situations they did not create. I am confident that all the facts will be fully examined through due process. As with any case, these filed charges are not a determination of guilt." Unquote. At the time I am making this video, Matthew Neely is working his way through the criminal justice system. His next court appearance is scheduled for August 17, 2026. Now moving to my analysis. Matthew Neely maintains his innocence, and he has a number of supporters. They argue that Rajone's behavior put Matthew in fear for his safety, especially when he said, "You ready for this?" and approached Matthew in a boxing stance. The state of Colorado, of course, disagrees. They believe that Matthew did not exhaust all his non-lethal options. Maybe he could have wrestled Rajone without using a weapon, or he could have deployed a less lethal weapon. There is the sense that the state is not particularly confident about the second-degree murder charge, which is why they added manslaughter. This allows them a fallback position in case the jury is unconvinced that Matthew committed murder. This brings me to the question, is Matthew Neely guilty of any crime, including murder or manslaughter? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that he is guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Rajone was unarmed at the moment of the shooting. That's pretty much it for the inculpatory factors. Moving to the exculpatory factors, Rajone attempted to evade a lawful traffic stop and collided with two vehicles. It was reasonable for Matthew to believe that Rajone was dangerous, so it made sense for Matthew to approach the vehicle with his gun drawn. Matthew was alone when he confronted Rajone. Right away, Rajone refused to comply with lawful commands and threw a pistol into the grass on the side of the road. Bystanders were hovering around during the confrontation, and Rajone was issuing instructions to retrieve the pistol. One can make a good argument that Matthew needed to be concerned about that pistol during the entire incident. There was never a moment when that was not a threat. Rajone could have retrieved the pistol, or someone else could have retrieved it, which is what Rajone was trying to make happen. Matthew needed to remain in control of the confrontation, and he needed to stay on his feet. If he entered into a wrestling match with Rajone, he could have not only lost a service weapon, but Rajone's pistol could have come into play. Rajone created this danger by throwing the pistol into the grass. This was not Matthew's fault. This was Rajone's fault. Matthew tried to knock Rajone to the ground a few times using his left hand, but Rajone remained on his feet. At one point, Matthew tried for 7 seconds to holster his service weapon. He was doing this to transition to his baton, but he could not get his service weapon into the holster. It seems clear that Matthew was trying to use less lethal methods to end the confrontation. He was simply unable to do so. Matthew said he did not use the pepper spray because he believed it would not de-escalate the situation, and he was afraid of being incapacitated due to how close he was to Rajone. Matthew retreated during the confrontation, and Rajone continued to approach him. Matthew repeatedly ordered Rajone to get on the ground and even said, "I'll shoot you." Rajone was not discouraged. He adopted a boxing stance and asked 6 times, "You ready for this?" This question can reasonably be interpreted as a threat. Rajone wanted Matthew to believe that he would physically strike him. As it turns out, Matthew was ready for this, so I guess the answer was yes. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Matthew Neely is guilty of any crime, including murder or manslaughter? In my opinion, no. Matthew is not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. He did not handle the confrontation very well, but his errors did not rise to the level of a crime. Perhaps Matthew could have wrestled Rajone to the ground. However, he had no way of knowing that and only had a short amount of time to decide what action to take. This was a high-pressure confrontation that required making tough decisions quickly. The pistol that Rajone discarded greatly restricted Matthew's tactical options. Rajone would have survived this incident if he simply complied with the officer's commands. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Rajone was a menace to society, driving a vehicle with a blood alcohol concentration of about 3.4 times the legal limit. He was not an angel. He tried to evade a lawful traffic stop, then made a threatening maneuver toward Matthew. There was no way for Matthew to know Rajone's physical capabilities at that time. He made the decision to shoot because he was afraid. The optics of this case did not look good. The incident involved a white police officer shooting a black motorist. There was pressure from the public for Matthew to be arrested. The district attorney ultimately yielded to that pressure and managed to convince a grand jury to indict him. The state now has an uphill battle as far as trying to secure a conviction. When reading the indictment, there is the sense that the district attorney's office lives in some type of alternate reality. like they believe all criminals are dealt with too harshly, and all officers are heavy-handed thugs just itching to kill a misunderstood criminal. The indictment listed several reasons to support the conclusion that Matthew was guilty. Presumably, this list of reasons was assembled by the district attorney's office, only to be later accepted by the grand jury. The items in the indictment were alleged mistakes that Matthew made during the confrontation. I did not list them as inculpatory factors because they don't qualify. Here are six supposedly inculpatory factors emphasized in the indictment and my thoughts on each one. Item number one, right after the collision, Matthew called for additional units, but he never mentioned that he was holding Rajon at gunpoint. The indictment is arguing that Matthew is somehow guilty of murder because he did not share enough information with dispatch. He should have communicated better, but this did not cause Rajon to be non-compliant. Item number two, Matthew told Rajon he was going to shoot, but he did not state this immediately before shooting him. Presumably, the indictment is implying that he should have warned Rajon a second or two before shooting. I'm pretty sure that Rajon remembered when Matthew said, "I'll shoot you." It's not the type of thing people forget, not an everyday occurrence. He didn't need a reminder, and even if he did, the gun pointed at him would have accurately signaled that being shot was in the realm of possibility. Item number three, as Matthew was retreating from Rajon, he could have walked backward on the sidewalk, but instead, he walked into the street. The indictment is saying that the route that Matthew took to retreat was unacceptable. Walking backward into the street was not the best idea, but Matthew had other problems to worry about at the moment. It seemed like a pretty small mistake compared to the stress he was under. Item number four, Rajon never verbally threatened to harm Matthew. It seems pretty obvious that Rajon demonstrated threatening behavior, but the indictment pointed out that he never verbally stated a threat. I would argue that when someone adopts a boxing stance and says, "You ready for this?" the words constitute a verbal threat. Item number five, Rajon never said that he would disarm Matthew or rearm himself. The indictment would have people believe that if a perpetrator does not clearly state a dangerous intent, the police have nothing to worry about. I can just imagine two police officers confronting a suspect with a knife. One of them pulls out his service weapon and says, "Drop the knife or I'll shoot." The other officer turns to his colleague and says, "Calm down. The man hasn't said what he was going to do with that knife." Now moving to the final item on the indictment, number six. After the shooting, Matthew turned away a woman who approached him and offered him a tourniquet, saying, "No, it's not a tourniquet kind of thing." I guess this is supposed to show that he was indifferent to Rajon living or dying. He was not effectively rendering aid. Rajon had been shot in the head. Usually that type of gunshot wound does not turn out very well for the person who was shot. Maybe Matthew simply recognized that Rajon was not coming back from this, no matter how many tourniquets were used. Now moving to my final thoughts. I believe there is a decent chance that Matthew will not be convicted of second-degree murder. However, with the current political climate in Colorado, the manslaughter charge might be a problem for him. The jury might be upset that Rajon was unarmed when he was shot and feel like Matthew needs to pay in some way. Even if Matthew is acquitted of both charges, the decision to charge him in the first place sends a chilling message to police officers and a very encouraging message to criminals. Police officers should be held criminally responsible when they commit crimes, but they should not be prosecuted merely because prosecutors can imagine a better tactical decision after the fact. Matthew had seconds to respond to a danger Rajon created, while the district attorney had months to convert those seconds into a murder case. The passage of time gave prosecutors the luxury of imagining better options, but it did not give Matthew those options when Rajon was advancing toward him. Those are my thoughts on the case of Matthew Neely and Rajon Belt Stubblefield. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.